You're listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
You're listening to The Archaeology Show. TAS goes behind the headlines to bring you the real stories about archaeology and the history around us. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello and welcome to The Archaeology Show, episode 330.
On today's show, we talk about controversial new evidence claiming that the pre-Clovis site of Monte Verde is possibly not as old as we once thought.
Let's dig a little deeper and make sure you find everything this time. Welcome to the Archaeology Show.
Hello.
All right. So we're going to have a little bit of a different episode this week. And for once, I mentioned we were going to do this last week and we're actually doing it.
We are. And we're recording it like ahead of time.
Look at us.
Look at us go.
We
amazing.
Don't suck. All right. So
today.
Today. All right, so we mentioned last week that there's a massive controversy brewing in the archaeology community right now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all centered around this site called Monte Verde. Technically, yes. Monte Verde 2.
Yes. And we have talked about Monte Verde before because it has been known as one of the earliest sites in the Americas. It's like one of those cornerstone sites for pre-Clovis activity in the Americas. And we talked about it a bunch. Other shows on the network have talked about it a bunch. And this most recent study, which is trying to debunk this site as one of the oldest sites in the Americas.
Well, debunk is a little harsh.
Maybe not debunk, but they're challenging the idea that it's as old as it is.
Yeah.
And we even had on one of our shows, the author of this paper was interviewed by David on the Ethnocynology podcast. So there's been a lot of activity around this topic and around the study on different shows on the network. And so it's our turn to weigh in. We're a little bit behind everybody else, I feel like, but also I personally just kind of wanted to like let the dust settle a little bit, you know, and like let everything come out, let everybody talk about it, let the critiques come in. If
we're letting the dust settle, we're kind of jumping the gun a bit.
Well,
still pretty dusty out there.
It might still be a little bit dusty, but at least at this point, it's May 18th. As of like last week, we have reactions, official published reactions from the original people that worked.
Okay,
the site.
But so, we're getting ahead of ourselves. What even are we talking about?
Yes.
So we're talking about, again, Monte Verde. This is a site that as if you studied archaeology at all in school since like 1980, you know about Monte Verde.
Yeah.
It's been in textbooks for almost 35 years.
Well, right? Yeah. I mean, I remember it was sort of just getting into the textbooks when we started college. It was like a footnote for a long time. Like, hey, this might be an old thing.
Sure.
But then, like, by the time we got into college, so we're talking the early 2000s, it was like an established.
Fairly well established, yeah.
Established pre-Clovis site.
Yeah, so this is located in Chile, South America.
Mm-hmm.
It's along, I don't know,
Chinchawapi
Creek.
Yeah.
Near the Mullen River. Not that means anything to anybody, but it's in southern Chile.
Well, the fact that it's on the creek is really important to know.
Well, sure,
because
later on.
Water stuff does things to sites.
Yeah, but not like the actual name of the creek, whatever. Yeah. So it was discovered in 1976 with the major excavations led for the last 50 years by archaeologist Tom Dillahay. He's of Vanderbilt University in Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And that started in 1977 and 1978. So it was discovered that he began with his probably annual field school students and things like that, 77 to 78.
Yeah, I think I read that it went all the way up into the 80s, like a good 10 years or so of excavations. Yeah. And the site is notable because of the exceptional preservation.
Yeah.
And it's waterlogged, right? So as we have talked about before on this podcast, a waterlogged site means really great preservations in the right circumstances. And this is a peat-rich area, so it just protected all of the organic materials and preserved them super well.
Yeah, they have a ton of material there too. They have stone tools, perishable organic materials like wood, plants, bone artifacts, all of this because of the high preservation quality in this environment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they don't just have artifacts too. They have like evidence of an actual settlement where people lived here, right? They've got these tent or hut-like structures, evidence of those. And they have hearths and all kinds of things like that show that people were like living here in a somewhat sedentary occupation, not just, you know, a transient hunting camp.
Which in and of itself would be quite exceptional for 14,500 years ago.
It
is when they
dated
this too.
It is.
That's like solid hunter-gatherer, you know, behavior right there. And or at least a time frame pretty much anywhere in North and South America.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just don't find occupation sites that are, they're like, hey, they stayed here for really long periods of time that are that old. Maybe in caves.
Yeah.
Because caves are kind of like a built-in habitation.
Yeah.
You know, we have some of those in Paisley Caves in Oregon and some other places in Nevada and things like that. But again, a cave is a little bit of a, like, how do you know that they didn't just come back every other month or every year or something like that? It's difficult to prove occupation.
Yeah. It's pretty well established that people didn't, like, set up and stay until agriculture came along. And we're well before that in this time period. So, you know, it definitely wasn't a permanent site, but it is a place that people would stay for a pretty long time. And you know that because of the type of artifacts that you have here. So,
yeah. And the 14,500 years before present, this isn't like 14,500 BCE.
Yeah.
It's 14,500 before present.
Right.
So
12,500 BCE, if you want to look at it that way.
And technically before present means before like the 1950s because of how carbon dating works.
Before radiocarbon dating.
Yeah. So anyway, that places it about 1,000 years before the earliest Clovis culture sites in North and South America, mostly North America.
Yeah.
And that brings it solidly into the pre-Clovis camp, which Monte Verde kind of kicked off the whole pre-Clovis debate.
It did.
Because pre-Clovis occupations have been known about for a while up to that point.
Yeah.
You know, at least 20, 30 years. And then when this came around and they're like, we have a site that's older.
Yeah.
And it was well established. Everybody had learned that the Clovis culture, the Clovis occupation across two continents, which I've always had a problem with, was the first peopling of the Americas.
Mm-hmm.
And now we know that's patently false. Not, well, there's plenty of other sites besides Monte Verde that prove that.
Yeah.
But either way.
Yeah. And it's been a struggle though. This site is beautifully preserved. There's tons of artifacts. Mm-hmm. And until this most recent study, it was something that was pretty well established as being pre-Clovis. But it's a difficult concept to be okay with though, right? Because we're talking about the southern part of South America in Chile, right?
Like southern part.
Southern Chile. Yeah. And so like, you know, when you're trying to figure out how the Americas were peopled, to think that they got all the way down to the southern part of South America, you know, like that means that they were in the northern part of North America way earlier than we ever thought too, you know?
Right. So, but that's the crazy thing about what this new study may actually do to the textbooks, right? Because if they do end up getting proven right?
Mm-hmm.
Because we'll talk about that later. But if that ends up being true, it calls into question, again, 50 years of speculation on the peopling of the Americas. Because Monte Verde said, exactly right, 14,500 years ago, that means, I mean, you didn't walk down there in a day on the Bering Land Bridge, right?
It would have taken generations.
It took us 2 months to get there in an RV from North America.
Right.
So anyway,
it's,
you know, it's a long ways. So this spawned the algae float hypotheses that are people are just following kelp fields down the coast and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The people getting to South America from like the Pacific Islands and just kind of canoeing it across.
Which I think is pretty well established. That's not.
But it spawned all these theories and ideas.
It did spawn the theories, right? But
I don't think anybody believes people walked down there and got there 14,500 years ago. There's other ways, because we don't have sites that would, you know, between here and there that would prove that hypothesis, right? So there has to be some other way that they would have gotten to South America if it was 14,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
If it was 8,000 years ago, that's a lot more plausible.
Yeah, for sure.
But the 14,500 means you have to invent other theories for how people got to the Americas. It wouldn't have been the land bridge at that time unless they just booked it. But why would they have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the strongest of the theories that came about were like the kelp highway one, where they followed the coast down.
I mean,
essentially,
how would they have gotten over the Panama Canal? Seriously.
It could be done.
No, there's no canal that 14,000.
Oh, yeah. There's.
Well, I caught you with that joke.
Yeah, that's true. It is completely inhospitable there, from what I understand. Like, it's incredibly...
That's difficult.
...thick jungle that they would have been fighting their way through.
You ever heard of the Amazon?
I mean,
it's not Amazon all the way across North South America, but you gotta get across some jungle in some high altitude and some...
For sure.
Oh, my God.
It makes you think, like, boats probably could have been involved or were involved, but that would be really early for boats, too. So there's just...
All the questions.
I mean, Monte Verde is such a cool site, but having it be... aged so early just brings up so many questions of how did they get there? How did they get that far south with technology that we didn't think that people would have had that long ago. So,
but, and this is why for the next 20 years, the site was in contention.
Yeah, it was. A lot of skepticism.
DeLay and his people and the other people that had worked there had to fight to prove what they were trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
And by 1997, a panel of archaeologists visited the site and validated the claims, making this the first and strongest of the pre-Clovis sites.
Yeah, and I was reading that that moment is when you start seeing Monteverde in the textbooks as like, you know, a pre-Clovis site or one of the first sites where people entered the Americas.
Was a solid pre-Clovis
site. Yeah, exactly. Was after 1997. It also opened up the door for these other pre-Clovis sites to be considered, right? Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the other pre-Clovis sites in the Americas are not that good. They don't have good tools, maybe, or they don't have good stratigraphic evidence, or like they just don't have as much strong evidence behind them as Monteverde does. But if you say, well, Monteverde was here 14,500 years ago, maybe there could have been a site in, I don't know, Texas or Pennsylvania that is 12,000 or 13,000 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Yeah. You know, because like people had to have been moving down the continent somehow.
Right.
So it made those other sites seem more legitimate, and it just like cracked the door for all the pre-Clovis work that has happened since then. But
yeah.
So it's a super important site. Like we really can't understate how important it was. I remember it being the kind of thing where like we learned about it in college and then the professors would be like, well, this is new, but here's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And but it's just gotten stronger since then.
And like I said, I can't state enough the other theories this had to have spawned. Right.
Yeah.
Because just because of the nature of where it was, like saying the Paisley Cave sites in Oregon are 14,500 or 15,000 years ago, that's not as much of a stretch.
No, it's not.
Oregon is much closer to Alaska.
Much closer to Alaska. So it's like, oh, well, cool. Like we got this thing going on in Chile. We're not going to argue about it in Oregon.
Yeah.
So
I feel like it would take me an actual 1,000 years just to get to Chile right now. Like that's a long ways away.
With just your, you know, getaway stick. Yeah.
I don't think I would even make it, to be honest with you. I would actually die.
Right.
Yeah. So
well, you can only imagine it would have taken generations to get all the way down there. And I mean, it wasn't a goal. They weren't trying to get there.
They didn't know it was there.
No, they're just like living, following like, game, whatever.
Mom, Dad, when are we going to get to Chile?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a thing.
Yeah. So anyway, well.
That's the overview of the site.
That's the overview of the site. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about the new research that is causing all the controversy. Back in a minute. Welcome back to episode 330 of the Archaeology Show. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the paper that kicked off this whole controversy a couple of months ago when it was published.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in March of this year, 2026, there was a study led by archaeologist Todd Surivel and his colleagues. And the main point of the study, we'll get into it point by point in a minute here, but the main point that they argue is that the key occupation layer at Monteverde, which is called Monteverde II, is much younger than previously thought.
Yeah.
And they have a couple different points that they make in their paper. We'll talk about those.
Yeah. They actually propose that the dates are, instead of 14,500 years ago, about 8,200 to 4,200 years ago, which is dramatically different.
Dramatically different.
Yeah.
That's so crazy different.
Yeah, I mean, there was Starbucks in Chile by that time. I mean, this is a whole different time period.
I have to, like, admit that, like, some skepticism, like, immediately when they wanted to drop the date by that many thousands of years, I was like, what? But anyway, we'll get into the reasons why.
Yeah, so they were already curious about this site and wondering about certain things, which caused them to take a, you know, to want to take a second look.
Yeah.
You don't just head down to this site because you're like, oh, let's go check it out for the weekend. You
know, right.
You got to make a plan.
Yes.
You got to get funding. So
a lot of work.
Yeah. They put a lot of thought and time into this to say, hey, I think this requires some new analysis. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. Mm-hmm. They went down there and they relied primarily on geological and stratigraphic analysis. They did not excavate.
They did not look at the artifacts. They in no way did anything that reproduces the work that was done 30, 40, 50 years ago.
Which, from an archaeological standpoint, no one can.
No, because it's gone.
Archaeology is destructive. So
right.
You can't, they can't like redig the exact thing. They can't do the, they could do additional excavation if they had the permits for it. They could do other things, but it would never be the original excavation.
Mm-hmm.
So that we have to take into account. We're relying on, in 1960, late 1970s is going to be, you know, take this with a grain of salt, but we're relying on them to have done proper data collection and preservation techniques and all the things that would allow for future analysis, you know, but it's really difficult to tell what new things are going to be invented in the future.
Yeah. And I think from what I understand, there are parts of the site that are unexcavated. So, you know, one thing that archaeologists do try to do is not excavate every single little bit of it, unless they have to, because something is going to get built there and they have to get it out of the ground. But if it's not that kind of place and they have the flexibility, then they leave stuff for future analysis, future excavation. You don't know what's going to come along in the future that you might need to have some in situ part of the site to study.
Yeah. And something to note, too, is they are not arguing the validity of the artifacts that were found. They're like,
they're great.
These are legit, but they're just arguing where they're actually placed in the stratigraphic timeline. Mm-hmm. And we actually got an email, it was about a month ago, somebody saying, you need to explain what stratigraphy means because it doesn't make any sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just because we're saying that word a lot, it's important to this.
Yes.
All stratigraphy is layers.
Yeah.
That's all it is. It's layers of soil, basically. Soil, rock, all whatever's underground, whatever layers those make up. Now, you can have arbitrary layers, which means, hey, every 10 centimeters, we're going to call this a layer.
Yeah.
Or you can have geological layers. So when the soil changes or becomes rock or you just, when some change is notable and you can see that in a profile view of it, then that's a new bit of stratigraphy, right?
Yeah.
So a new stratigraphic layer.
And this is a geology concept. So of course, we're speaking in like really large amounts of time, usually. Yeah. Usually, not always, but usually. Well, so,
and geologically speaking, these aren't large amounts of time because in archaeology, you can generally assume that the stuff that's on top is younger than the stuff that's down below.
Correct. Yeah.
In geology, you can't always assume that because continents will flip themselves completely over. Mm-hmm. They're continents, but plates will flip themselves completely over.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen mountains out in the Western United States or a lot of places in the world where you've got these like layer cakes sitting on an angle, that's something that may have already flipped over several times. Mm-hmm. You don't even know until you start dating stuff in those layers.
But that kind of geology is super old, like way before any kind of human occupation. So generally speaking, you don't have to worry about that on that grand of a scale.
Yeah.
However, you do have to worry about it on a smaller scale, especially when you have a lot of water involved.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about that because that is some of their arguments in this new study.
Yeah. So as we mentioned, they did not get to dig, according to some of the arguments later on.
Yeah.
They didn't actually dig in even the right space. Not dig, but take samples in the right location for where Monteverde 2 is.
Right. They're working outside of it.
Yeah.
It sounded to me like they were trying to get as close or as similar to what the site of Monteverde would have looked like as they could without actually being on the site itself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they just didn't have permission or they're trying to like work, you know.
Yeah.
Behind the scenes and like not have people know what they were doing. I don't know. I don't know what the motivation was, but they definitely didn't work on the site itself.
Yeah, they claim to have found this volcanic ash layer that they called Lupue or Lupue Tephra.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, this is the Sorval paper, they said that the ash layer was found beneath the archaeological deposits. So if we go back to the stratigraphy, that means the ash is older.
Yeah.
And then the ash, which we can date ash these days pretty accurately. Like that's not
really
a dispute.
And this ash layer is well known. And it's all over this part of Chile. And so they know that this ash layer is 11,000 years old.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It's well dated and well known. And just real quick, tephra, I don't think we defined that, but tephra is like that stuff that shoots out of a volcano, like the volcanic dust, basically, that comes out.
Ash.
And then ash. And it just settles in a layer all over the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who was around for Mount St. Helens, right? You were there.
I was there.
You know what that's like. So, yeah.
So nearly ruined my 5th birthday, but no, it did not. So anyway.
Yeah. So that's their first argument is that this 11,000 year old ash layer is below the human occupation. Therefore, the human occupation could not be that old.
Right.
And the question you might be asking yourself is how could they know that if they didn't actually excavate this ash layer on the site itself? But we'll get to that in a minute because that is definitely one of the arguments, the critiques back of the study.
Yeah, for sure. So the second thing that they did was, now, ash is not dated through carbon dating.
Right.
You can only go back 50 to 60,000 years with carbon dating
because
of the half-life of carbon-14.
Mm-hmm.
They date ash because of using the half-life of other radioactive chemicals that have half-lives in the 500,000 to millions of years, right? And so those are easier to date because of those components that are in there.
Mm-hmm.
So the second thing they did was they looked at some of the wood that was dated to 14,500 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that the wood that they found and they dated to this 4,000 to 8,000 years was naturally eroded from the creek banks and then redeposited into younger archaeological layers. Because they say there was a climactic event around 10,000 years ago that they see in the geological layers that could have caused, you know, massive flooding and things like that, and massive amounts of heavy erosion. I mean, we're in Western North Carolina, and a year and a half ago, a hurricane from Florida came over here, caused a lot of rainfall, and you can drive down some of these rivers where these towns are and sometimes were, and the erosion that happened in the course of a few days is phenomenal.
It's insane what water can do in those sort of flooding events, right? So,
and we're talking about, you know, 10,000 plus years of that happening.
Yeah.
You know, even if it's occasional, one or two of them would be a massive event, right?
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly.
You know, if you've got this site and people were there and then you've got a massive erosion event, stuff's going to get washed down and mixed in and you're going to have unconfirmed result. It really, the Dillehay team, if this is true, should have had radiocarbon dates all over the map and nothing consistent. But that's not true.
That's not true. Yeah. And another important thing to keep in mind about wood too is that you don't know at what point that piece of wood was picked up and used by the person. So
we're just dating the time the tree died.
Exactly. So, you know, it gets a little weird with that too. Now, granted, there's probably not a 3,000-year-old branch on the ground that you can pick up and do anything with, but maybe
that's not necessarily true, right?
Yeah,
because you go on the Northern California coast and the Oregon coast, and there are trees that are 3,000 or 4,000 years old, right?
Yeah, and there are. That's true.
These trees fall over, become driftwood, and they die. And that driftwood literally can last in the ocean and sit on beaches for hundreds or thousands of years. And then you pick up a piece of driftwood, you make a canoe out of it, you make a club out of it, you make a whatever out of it. The dating is not going to be accurate to the time of use.
Yeah. I mean, all that means is that dating in this situation is crazy. And you do have to not take it with a grain of salt, but you just need to have a pile of dates.
Yeah.
A pile of them.
Yeah.
And I think they did.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that in, you know, when we get to the end. But So yes, that was the second point that they were kind of, that the Todd Surville paper was refuting the original dating, saying that this natural erosion. Now, the third point that they had is that they sampled sediments from areas around this creek that the site is located on, and they used luminescence dating and stratigraphic analysis to determine that those deposits were younger, essentially, than what they said.
Yeah. Stratigraphic analysis, just that looks higher than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And luminescence is about the amount. Oh, God, I'm going to get this wrong, but.
Go ahead.
No, go on. I can't.
I'll get it wrong, too. But there are certain chemicals, crystal formations, things like that, that when you can tell the last time it was exposed to light.
Light exposure. Yeah.
So it's really the last time it was deposited. And again, if something was used 14,500 years ago and then 10,000 years ago, a massive flood came through and turned it all up. Was it exposed to light again? And
then,
you know, flip back over and turn down. Like, you only know the last time that it was exposed to light.
That dating has always felt a little shaky to me, unless it's in like the most perfect of circumstances.
It depends on context.
Yeah.
Like, remember we did this one article with those huge, like,
the pots,
the clay pots,
That's still my favorite example of that kind of dating.
Like, they basically lifted them up and dated underneath them.
Yeah. Cause they're like, when was the last time this saw the light?
Chances are when that was placed there.
When it was placed there. Yeah. So anyway,
I just want to go back in time and just move a bunch of stuff slightly.
But like, why would anybody do that?
Oh my
God.
You
just want to mess with future archaeologists. Yes. That's your entire goal.
That is my entire goal.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So that's what this new study is saying. That's why they're critiquing. It's very much a geology and stratigraphy criticism of the dating of the original site. So,
We also have to point out, and this doesn't invalidate Surville's study, but they were down there for a couple of days.
They were. Yeah.
They flew down there.
Maybe a couple weeks.
I don't think so. They didn't.
Was actually, it even that long?
I think it was a very short period of time. Yeah. They went down there. They had a plan. They weren't just, you know, tourists, but they went down there and did some stuff for a few days. And then that was it.
Yeah.
The original study lasted years of digging.
More decades of analysis of the proceeds of those digs.
Yeah. So much. Because they pulled out so much of that stuff. I mean, there's, you know, on a average site, you know, a month of excavation could be years of analysis, really, when you get down to it. So, mean, they had years of excavation, which translates into decades of analysis.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
Plus, you can reanalyze old things with new methods and techniques, and mm-hmm. there's just a lot baked into all that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, well, let's come back on the other side, and in our last segment, we'll talk about the criticisms that mm-hmm. have come out from Dillehay and his team. The clapback, yeah,
and yeah.
A total of at least 30 scientists
yes.
have come out and said,
"Yeah,
I don't think so."
Yeah,
youngin.
Yeah.
All right, back in a minute. Welcome back to the Archaeology Show, episode 330, and it's time to learn about what the original scientists and a whole bunch of other people,
yeah.
not even connected, said about this.
How they answered back to this publication.
Now, we got to say, too, that anytime you've got a long-held, long-standing belief in archaeology, and probably other scientists, but we're connected to archaeology.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime somebody comes around and says, I found some evidence that completely disproves your entire life's work.
Yeah.
Not yours, but many people's.
Yeah.
There's a strong kickback.
There is. And there's a really strong desire to protect.
Yeah.
What you've been saying for 30 years.
Yeah.
And you have to understand that when you're reading the criticisms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we'll get into it. But
we'll get into it. So
yeah, I have thoughts.
Well, this one article that is one of the last articles in our list of articles that we're citing here, written yes. by Christina Kilgrove, who we've talked about all her stuff. She's
yeah,
a really great writer.
She is like the best archaeology communicator from a yeah. news publication standpoint, yeah. it feels like. She's yeah. writing for Life Science.
Yeah. And we're recording this on May 18th, and she published this 6 days ago.
Yes.
So there's probably been even more since then that we just hasn't made the news cycle yet mm-hmm. that we've seen.
Yeah.
But the title of this article in Life Science is called, quote, speculation and, quote, egregious failure. 30 researchers publish scathing critiques of study that questioned date of early human occupation of Monteverde in Chile. I'm going to read the subtitle here, too.
Those are some big words.
I know. It says dozens of scientists have banded together to pen scathing research letters to the journal Science about the publication of a study claiming the 14,500-year-old Monteverde archaeological site in Chile is much younger than shown.
Yeah.
So they didn't just sit there and say, oh, look, new research. They're like, okay, sure, but
take your research and
yeah,
and shove it somewhere.
Basically. Yeah. And I think even it says in this article here, Dillehay was quoted as saying, you know, they basically went down for an afternoon and tried to invalidate decades of research.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes. So anyway, why are they freaking out over this? Why are they saying this?
Yeah. Why are they not accepting of this new research?
Yeah.
I really want to hope that it's not because they just don't want to.
Yeah.
And I don't think they have some valid arguments back.
And one of the first things they mentioned, which I'm not sure I agree with this, but I'm also not a, you know,
mm-hmm.
70-year-old career archaeologist that have studied this my entire life.
Right.
So take that with a grain of salt.
Yep.
But one of the things they say in this critique is that they sampled, the Servell study sampled sediments from areas outside of the actual Monteverde II excavation zone.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, honestly, they couldn't have sampled from within that necessarily because it's all gone now.
Kind of, but there's probably walls along the edges where they could have. But again, they either didn't have permission or didn't want to get permission to go test right inside of the site. So they probably got as close as they could outside of the site.
Plus, stratigraphically speaking, you don't necessarily have to do that to go do some additional analysis.
Yeah.
You have to be near it, probably.
Near, yep. but not in.
In
yeah.
the same stratigraphies, which there's mm-hmm. maps upon maps. Mm-hmm. And they would have gone down there, found a profile, found an area where they could sample and say, match that up. You can also just
yeah.
like, hold up a sheet and probably match it up to study areas within the excavation zone.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I don't buy that for a minute as a hard critique.
No, it's not a super hard critique for me either. And when we were listening to David's interview of Todd Servell, like he really did do his work into figuring out where to
yeah.
to test these sites and stuff like that. It's a great interview.
Well,
I think we ran it on our show, didn't we?
We did, yeah.
yeah.
They knew what they were doing. They knew
did.
What controversy
yeah.
they were going to cause too.
They did. And I mean, he had skepticism over the dates of the site because of the stratigraphy and the geological processes that he knew would have happened in this area. And so, right. I mean, he was kind of looking for it a little bit, but you have to understand, I mean, they didn't really look at that too closely in the original studies either. They didn't do a lot with this stratigraphy stuff. So
here's the other thing Dillehay says too. He basically said that, you know, well, okay, first off, as we know, Todd Servell says in the interview with David that he's not a Clovis firster.
Right.
However, his research would seem to refute that.
Yeah.
His ideas, his discussions, the way he approaches things would seem to refute that. Mm-hmm. Nobody, I feel like nobody in their right mind these days would come out and just say, I believe this hardcore. Yeah.
Like, I don't think Clovis, like, it's not really a thing like it was in the 90s. Not anymore.
Like, deep inside your mind, you might be thinking, okay, everything I do is kind of making this assumption and I'm going along that path. Yeah. Right? And that's exactly what Dillehay said that him and his team did. He's like, they went down there with preconceived notions and they wanted to find something. And guess what? They found it.
Yeah.
Anytime you go to any sort of science and you go looking for something,
you're probably going to find it. Yeah.
You're going to ignore the stuff that doesn't support that.
Yeah. Like, did they purposely pick the areas that would geologically support the hypothesis that they had in their heads when they went down there? Maybe. Like, there might've been other areas that wouldn't have supported it and they didn't choose to test in those areas. Also, I mean, we're talking about a creek, right?
Yeah.
And like, that is like some of the most messed up stratigraphy ever, Long Creek, generally speaking. So like, it is entirely possible that the stratigraphy is completely different, even nearby, because of water. Water action, water erosion, water does crazy stuff. So can you really assume that what is stratigraphy in one spot is going to be the same 100 meters down or however far down? I don't know. I don't know if you can make that assumption. I think you need to do this testing on the site.
If it's on an outside corner, you know, where the water is hitting it really hard, especially in flooding events, I mean, there's going to be a lot of erosion and a lot of mixing. Mm-hmm. I grew up in Washington State and, you know, we've been up there a number of times together where we've seen after major river events, major rain events, where water's just rushing down these rivers, the logs.
Yeah.
The logs and the branches and just the sheer number of trees that are flooding down this thing and getting redeposited somewhere else.
Yeah.
And probably getting, you know, slammed into the edge of a bank somewhere where they don't belong stratigraphically.
Yeah.
You just can't trust that. Now, if you're finding worked pieces of wood, right? If you find a spear or a digging stick or something like that, and that is in conjunction with other artifacts, then that you can date confidently that is with those artifacts. It probably wasn't redeposited, right? But it seems to be, now we haven't read all the Monteverde research, but it seems to be that Surville was going on the assumption that the original team dated just the wood that was found on the site, not necessarily human modified wood.
Right.
And so they did the same thing and are like, well, this wasn't here.
Yeah.
You know, this has been redeposited.
Yeah.
And that's another criticism that Dillehay and his team have had. Is they're saying that is a massive assumption. You have no proof of that.
Right.
They're like, yeah, sure. Maybe that's true, but you have no proof of that.
Yeah.
So how can you just take down this entire site because you think this might be true and you want it to be true?
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I agree with.
Yeah, I agree with that too. One of the other things opponents are saying to the Surville study is that they focus too narrowly on the geology. And that's kind of what we were just talking about there, because like, this site is so rich. There are so many components to it. They have hearts, they have tools, they have worked wood. There are even footprints, right? They've got mastodon remains. They have preserved food remains. And then they also have the evidence of structures. All of those things provided dates in various different ways. They've tested all that stuff. They've tested the wood that was part of the structure where they could. They've tested these preserved food remains where they could. They've done so much testing. And even though they do get a range on that testing when they do it, it all still falls fairly neatly into the, you know, 14,500-ish. I saw some older dates in some of the conversations around this, and I saw some younger ones. But like, they average into that 14,500 time frame. And so when you have enough dates, I feel like that says something, you know, and that's of the actual archaeological remains that are on the site. Explain that, you know, like that's kind of what I would want to ask Todd about is like, explain to me a carbon date of a burnt seed or something like that would have been part of food that a human was eating that dates to 14,500. How do you explain that date?
Well, and I don't know if this is backpedaling or actual, you know, ideas that they have, but it seems to be that, you know, what Servo was saying, especially in the interview with David and, you know, the paper as well, is that they're not necessarily refuting any of that.
Mm-hmm.
They're just kind of reframing the whole site and saying, well, where did that stuff come from? Why is all this old stuff, you know, down in that area? And because they only studied one small aspect of this entire site, and that is the stratigraphy and dating some of that stratigraphy. And they've just come out and said, hey, I don't know what this means, but it doesn't seem like what we found is as old as what people claim is there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, discuss amongst yourselves, right? So didn't seem like they were coming out with this blast on Monteverde saying, hey, you know, this is all bullshit. Let's rewrite the textbooks.
Yeah.
But they're just like, hey, this is what we found. What does it all mean?
But it did kind of come out that way, though. Well, whether did, or course. Not they intended yeah. it to, it definitely did sort of hit that way for sure.
And that's where I think the people that have the 30 scientists that have written, you know, several papers mm-hmm. and all signed on to this thing and saying
letters, I think is, the yeah. the scientific letters of yeah, yeah, in response yeah.
Yeah. saying this is all BS. I think, you know, maybe it was just the way that it came out, the paper, or maybe the way Todd, you know, presented it. I'm not really sure. I'd like to see if this was presented at the SAA's Society for American Archaeology conference.
Oh, yeah. I'm not sure.
That happened not long ago.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think people were just a little
blindsided.
They were blindsided. By yeah. it. But also, it's also science, right? Like, let's take this paper and say, okay, so what do those things mean? Mm-hmm. Because the dates they got weren't wrong. They couldn't have been wrong. They were, I mean, it's pretty, carbon-14 dating is pretty accurate these days.
Yeah.
So where did the stuff come from
that
Surville and his team got, right?
Right, right.
And where did the stuff come from that Dillehay and his team got, right? Mm-hmm. So where, you know, just, it sounds like there just needs to be more research. More people mm-hmm. need to go down there and keep digging, you know,
yeah.
and then figure out the site.
Yeah, for sure. I think an accurate or valid criticism of the original research by Tom Dillehay is that the stratigraphy and the geological processes were maybe not included in their conclusions as mm-hmm. much as they should have been, yeah. right? And I think that was one point that Todd Surville is trying to make, is that you have to have a well-rounded view of these sites and include all of the different things that would help, you know, tell you what was going on here, how long ago, whatever, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if that is the point, is to include more graphic research, then I would agree with that. I think that's a valid point. But I think coming out and saying that Monteverde is actually only 4,000 to 8,000 years old was, I mean, that does feel a little bit aggressive to me.
Yeah.
And for me, and I had to check myself, but my personal knee-jerk reaction was, no, that's not right. That there's something wrong with the research here. And this was done as a retaliatory thing to be like, ha, gotcha.
Yeah.
And as I've let go of that initial reaction and read more about this and read all of these articles and tried to read the actual like scientific paper, which is like super dense and hard to just read, I've backed away from that. And I'm like, well, there is some stuff here that is valid. You do need to like understand the full geomorphology of this entire area in order to draw the conclusions that you're trying to draw. So
yeah. It's interesting too, because they're also challenging the research methods from the Surville study, because you know, they actually said that there is actually no tephra ash layer at 11,000 years old.
That's what they say, is that they've, on their site in their excavations, they looked for that layer and did not have it.
Yeah,
is what they're saying.
Yeah, which either means
they didn't go deep enough.
Either they didn't go deep enough.
Yeah.
Or it means that the layer eroded off the top of it, you know, before they could get to it. Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, it was deeper. That's what they're claiming.
Or
so,
it. Yeah. I mean,
because they said that the geological layer that Surville and his team saw was characterized by a layer of fungus and an iron rich oxide pyroclastic bead layer.
Mm-hmm.
So
I've read that. I didn't quite understand exactly what they were saying with that. That what Surville found was not the actual ash layer. Is that what they're trying to say?
Some other sort of volcanically formed layer, but not the
the 11,000 year old one. Oh, see, that's a big claim right there.
It's huge.
To tell somebody who's kind of an expert in stratigraphy and geomorphology that the thing that you say this is not correct.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't like that either. Like that's not fair, because these guys are experts in that kind of stuff. To get that wrong would be crazy.
Yeah, and Surville's team actually did find, according to this article from Christina Kilgrove, that they did actually date charcoal and wood from 13,400 to 16,500 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but then claimed that it was washed into the site, redeposited, making the site seem older than mm-hmm. it is. So there's dates on the site that are in the range that they found, mm-hmm. and then there's dates that are older, mm-hmm. and they say those must have been washed in.
They must, yeah.
Yeah, why couldn't the other ones have been washed in?
Right.
What's the solidity of the claim there, no?
Yeah.
Like why?
Yeah.
So, anyway. But there are some pretty big names in archaeology that are writing back on this and saying, mm-hmm. your research is flawed. They're not just coming in saying, we don't believe you. They're coming in saying your research is actually flawed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is a pretty big claim.
It's a really big claim. And honestly, I don't really love how anybody's gone about doing any of this. I don't like the Cerevel seems to have kind of gone behind the back of the main researchers here and done this research outside of the site. I don't like that Dillehaye is not very open to hearing these criticisms either, because they say they don't have this 11,000 year old layer on their site. Well, did they dig deep enough? Did they just not go deep enough? Did they hit sterile because there's no more human activity? And it would have been there had they gone another however many, whatever. So I don't like any of that. I wish that they could just work together and like really do this thing from a real point of view, because it doesn't actually matter. It does not matter if humans were there 14,500 years ago or 8,000 years ago. What matters is that we have an accurate, clear picture of when our continents were populated, and having a site that is not accurate is not fair, you know? So it doesn't matter what the actual data is. We just need to know what it is.
Yeah.
That annoys me.
Yeah, indeed. All right. Well, I think we've said probably all we can say on this.
Yeah. So as always, it's like more research needed, right?
Yeah. And this argument is going to keep going too.
It is going to keep going. Yeah.
You know, we'll just have to see where the dust settles.
Yeah. There's good arguments on both sides. And I think one other thing, just before we sign off here, I did look to see if Todd Cerevel is really like a Clovis first person. I just actually just asked ChatGPT. I was like, can you tell me if he is or not? Because I thought we've seen that where people are claiming that about him. And like, I want to make it very clear that is not a fair judgment to say about him or anybody else. And that, like we said earlier in the show, almost nobody's a Clovis first person anymore anyway.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of researchers and a lot of scientists and some of the members of the APN. Y'all know who you are. You know who I'm looking at. Who feel like these really big pre-Clovis claims need to have really big evidence. And Todd Cerevel seems to fall into that category as well. So like, if you're going to say something like this, you need to have really solid, really strong evidence. And in his opinion, he doesn't think that the evidence is there for Monteverdi and for a lot of the other pre-Clovis sites. Right. But he is always looking for it. He's looking for it because he wants that evidence to exist. So I think that is admirable. And that is the way that you do have to approach these kind of sites, is you need to find really good, really strong evidence to make everybody, you know, believe it and agree.
For sure.
So let's all keep doing that.
Let's all keep doing that.
I'm going to keep doing that from right here behind my microphone.
Nice. All right. Well, let us know what you guys think. There's a few of you that I expect will write in on this. Some of our longtime listeners and writers.
Oh, yeah.
But
love it.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Feel free to comment wherever you see the show and write in chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. All right. With that, we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Archaeology Show. Feel free to comment and view the show notes on the website at www.arcpodnet.com. Find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at ArcPodNet. Music for this show is called I Wish You Would Look from the band Sea Hero. Again, thanks for listening and have an awesome day. Thanks for listening to this podcast. The Archaeology Podcast Network's chief editor is Rachel Roden. Our executive producer is Ashley Airy. Our social media and newsletter coordinator is Matilda Siebrecht. The APN was founded by Chris Webster and Tristan Boyle on December 1st, 2014. We're supported by our amazing podcast hosts, many volunteers, and listeners like you. Check out membership at www.arcpodnet.com/members.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archpodnet.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.